Stay tuned for The Lynn Show. Today, I'm airing an interview I did with Sheldon Rodin. Sheldon is reprising his role as Marvin Gaye, back by popular demand, in Marvin Gaye, Prince of Soul, which will be running at West Coast Black Theater Troupe. Sheldon's story is unusual. This is a man who is performing so that others can be made happy and smile by what he offers. It's a lovely story. So hang on. Here come the show.
Hearing from an inner voice, finding choice where there's no choice, with gentle prodding from the voice. Oh, you really can. Deeper, deeper down.
Is about being the person you really are. That is to say, being all of who you really are, not just showing or demonstrating those parts of you which you believe are acceptable, those aspects of you that you believe will bring approval, attention, affection, love, and perhaps hiding or pretending not to have those qualities which you think are unattractive, ugly, damaging, and will bring isolation, neglect, punishment even. As a therapist, it is clear to me that many of us are forced in our childhoods by our family of origin, by our culture, by our religion, by schools, by friends, to come to see things about ourselves as unattractive or which that will bring, as I said, neglect or punishment, sometimes even abuse. If you were raised in a family where the old-fashioned notion, you know, children are to be seen but not heard, that's a very old-fashioned notion, but there are still parents who believe that children should not have very much autonomy and they should do what they're told, and if they don't, they should learn very quickly that that's unacceptable. And the way that they learn it can be quite unpleasant. So if you've had an experience in your childhood that suggests to you that the way you smile, or the way you eat, or the way you smell, or the fact that you like to dance, or that you hum, or that you have, I don't know, buck teeth, that these things cause other people to tease you, embarrass you, or even neglect you or punish you. And this actually does happen. I'm sure that you know this. Of course, I see it really glaringly in my office, because what happens to these people, and I think it happens to all of us in one way or another, we grow up feeling that something about us is really unattractive, and first we try and hide it, and after a while we forget we have it. Well, this works pretty well in the circumstance that demanded it, but later in life, your ability to love all of who you are, not to feel that your hair or your smile or your smell or your ability to hum or tap dance or whatever it is ugly, that really costs us. It takes energy to suppress parts of ourselves, and we always feel, even if we're not really dealing with it, that there's something wrong with us. So the Lynn Show is about making this point. If you were forced to hide some important part of you undercover in your childhood, I want to tell you that recovering it is useful, and it is not impossible, and that's what this show is about. If you want to hear more about this, you can go up to my website, which is thelynnshow.com, T-H-E-L-Y-N-N-E. Don't leave the E out of Lynn. thelynnshow.com. You can get a copy of my book, which is called When You Can, You Will, Why You Can't Always Do What You Want to Do and What to Do About It. You can talk to me. Click on Email Me. Ask me anything you'd like. I'd love to hear from you. You can get me to come and talk to your group or organization. And you can hear all the old shows in podcast form. You can download them from the website or from iTunes. And you can hear all of the interviews, including the one I'm doing today. I interview people who make their living or their life with an art. I do this because when you hear them talk, you can hear what it sounds like to be who you really are, because in their work, that is who they are. So, today's interview is with Sheldon Rodin, who, as I said in the lead-up, is reprising his role as Marvin Gaye in Marvin Gaye, Prince of Soul, at West Coast Black Theater Troupe. And as I also said in the run-up, Sheldon's story is very sweet, and actually quite unusual. So, in addition to my interview with Sheldon, I'm going to play several cuts of Marvin Gaye singing his own songs, giving you a taste of what you can expect when you come to see Sheldon. And we're going to start out with Your Precious Love, and that's going to lead right into my interview with Sheldon. So here now, Marvin Gaye and Tammy Terrell singing Your Precious Love.
There's something new,
oh, baby,
honey, to keep me loving you,
oh, honey.
And with every passing minute,
oh,
baby, so much joy wrapped up in it.
Joy you bring.
Sheldon Rodin in a tiny little office at the West Coast Black Theatre Troupe offices. And I am interviewing Sheldon because he is about to open in, what are they calling it? Just
this time around they're calling it Marvin Gaye, Prince of Soul.
Prince of Soul. Marvin Gaye, Prince of Soul.
Marvin Gaye, Prince of Soul.
What did they call it last time?
It was Marvin Gaye, the man and his music.
Aha. Uh-huh. Okay. All right. So this is, by popular demand, return engagement of Sheldon doing Marvin Gaye. And he just recently did a showcase, which I know I wasn't here, so I couldn't come, but he was sold out every day that he did it.
Right,
he was sold
right,
out.
Right.
So now, Sheldon, I don't know how long I've been watching you, a long, long time.
Probably before I did the first Marvin
Gaye. Oh, definitely before, yes.
I came into the troupe in late 2008, early 2009.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. How old were you?
I was about 23, 24, somewhere around there.
Oh, so you're a man now.
Yes, I guess you could say that.
Definitely,
yes, definitely have grown.
Yes, you have.
From then, so.
I've seen you in so many things. In fact, I even got to dance with you on stage.
Yes,
and remember,
which we had a lot of fun.
We had a lot of fun. Yes, yeah.
My new dancing partner.
Yeah, right. And you know, I'm a fan, as everybody is, and I've seen you grow. All over this time, right. And not only in talent, because that was always there, but in comfort, you know, in mm-hmm. ease on the stage. Mm-hmm. It just has gotten better and better and better.
You know, I've gotten that a lot. For myself, it's, you know, you say, I haven't grown up still the same person. But when I look back on, you know, my previous performances, and then I come into now and I can tell, there is a really big difference. Mm-hmm. Even, you know, to this day, I'm still kind of a shy, you know, person. The stage is really not my friend, although it may not look that way. I'm very shy, but I have come into, I guess, kind of shaking that shyness off when I get on stage. And, you know, of course, when I step off stage, it comes back again, so.
Yeah, I'd like to talk about that, actually, because it doesn't show on stage.
Wow.
No, it doesn't show. And when you do something like Marvin Gaye, where it's all you,
mm-hmm.
I mean, it's one thing if you're part of the ensemble or part of the cast, you
right,
know.
Right.
But when it's Marvin Gaye, I mean, it's you,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And so any shyness you would think would be, you know, I mean, it would really be a challenge to overcome.
It is. And that's why, ironically, it's so appealing that I am playing this character. Because if you do any studying or research on Marvin Gaye, he was the same person. Although we are generations apart, we had never met each other. Personally, he doesn't know me. I don't know him. But we share a lot of the same, not only nuances, but just some of the same spirits. Talking to, his wife and reading about him, he was a shy person.
Wow.
And his family, they speak about it a lot. He was very shy.
Wow.
But as you say, when he stepped on stage,
Yeah. You
couldn't tell.
No, it didn't show.
And so it's the same for me. I didn't know that that's how he was until I read about him.
Wow.
And then I'm like, wow, because I'm, people don't believe it, but I am really shy. Like,
No.
Before I step on stage, I am like crazy nervous, almost about to fall out, but somehow, I'm able to get up there and shake it off.
Yeah, I really want to talk about this. I interview people who make their living or their life with an art. And it's very clear that the art to which you are giving your life and trying to make a living
mm-hmm.
is the art of performing.
Mm-hmm.
Singing, dancing, acting, is that accurate?
That's correct. That is correct.
Yeah. And I very much want to talk about this issue of shyness, but before I do that,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to ask you the question I ask everybody, and that is, can you remember the very first time in your life when it occurred to you that you might want to sing or dance or perform, or that it might be fun, or that it was attractive or compelling?
Actually, I can't. I can remember it like it was yesterday.
Really?
It was the very first time I had sang openly.
You say again.
It was the very first time I had sang openly in front of a group of people. It was, I was in church, of course.
Ah.
And the song that I sung was a song that was taught to me. It was, named Walk Around Heaven. And my first time singing that song, I was maybe 6 or 7 years old. I knew nothing about performing or music. But when I sang that song and I seen the response from the congregation, I was like, whoa, I think I like
wow.
this. Although the whole time I was standing up there, I think I had my eyes closed the whole time. I wasn't looking at anybody. I was just singing. And when I finished the song and I, heard the response and I seen the response of the people, I said, wow, I think I can get used to this. And I fell in love with music and singing. I come from a background of music. My family of singers. And so, it was kind of deeply rooted in me.
Well, this was my question. What was the motivation for, or the trigger for singing that song in church?
The response of the people.
No, what made you do it in the first place?
Oh, well, again, that was the first time I sung openly. Now, I had already sung, I would sing at home, or, if we were, at the church, but in, a rehearsal-type setting, I would sing. So
it was natural for you to sing?
Yes.
You were really, singing anyway.
Yeah, just not in front of people.
Right. And do you remember why you suddenly were put up there to do this?
My choir leader at that time was a singer as well. And his nephew and I, we grew up, we were the same age. And so he figured that, the choir leader, him, his brothers and sisters, and my mom and uncles had a group together, a singing group. And so for him, it was like, okay, they're the next generation.
Yes.
So let's get them started. And so they teach us this song that they, they used to sing, a while ago. And that's what, motivated us to, or for him to teach us that song. He felt like, oh, they're the next generation. They can sing. And they're the kids. We were six, seven years old. And he felt like, we had the talent.
Yeah, it was expected.
Yes.
It was expected.
Pretty much.
Right.
Pretty much.
And so you got up there and did it because that's what was expected for you to do, right?
Yes.
Right. And then you look out.
I look out and I see the response of the audience. And it wasn't that they were clapping because they thought that I was good. I was more excited about, wow, I just made somebody smile. I just made somebody happy. That's what motivated me.
Wow. Okay,
So this is really interesting. So you've got this really powerful memory that you can still see. I can see it when you're talking about it, right?
Oh, yes.
Right, right? And it says to you, I have something that brings pleasure to people, mm-hmm. and it's something that I do naturally, that I don't, it's not a stretch for me. I don't have to work at this.
Right.
Right?
Right.
Okay. So did you then begin to sing or in public, or was that the last time you did it for a long time? Or
no, I actually began to sing. I wouldn't say in public, but in the church community.
Mm-hmm.
You know, me and my friend, Johnny Norris is his name, we were known, you know, in the church community, you know, those two little boys there, you know. So we would sing, you know, different, you know, programs, youth programs, that sort of thing. So
yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's when it all started, and it just went, you know, uphill from there.
Yeah, well, tell me about the uphill. I mean, did you pursue it, or did it come to you? Do you know what I mean?
It almost, I would say it came to me.
Yeah, tell me.
Because after, you know, performing in the church community, it got to a point where you didn't have to look for it. People came looking for you. You know, can you sing at this program? Can you sing at this wedding? Can you sing at this funeral? And so it just, you know, it started coming. And for a while, you know, that's what I did. And so around about my teenage years, I had gotten this thing where I was like, you know what? I was born and raised in the church. I'm tired of church music. I want to try something different.
Wow.
And so I tried to do this switch over to R&B.
How did you do that? I mean, well, did you listen to records? Did you take classes?
Well, no, of course, you know, my parents, you know, they would play those old, like, you know, Motown, like Marvin Gaye, and, mm-hmm. You know, back in the 80s, early 90s, that's when, you know, you still had a little bit of that good soul music. Mm-hmm. And so I would just listen to that,
right.
And, you know, and I'm like, wow, I want to sing like them. You know, I want to be like them. I want to record like them. I want to make people feel good like
so
them.
So already in your teenage years, are we talking about 13, 16?
We're talking like 12,
oh, yeah,
13
right.
years
right,
old.
Right, right, right.
Yeah.
You're already thinking, maybe this is a career.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, maybe
definitely.
I can do this for my definitely. Life, right? Oh, yeah.
I think when I was about 14 years old was when I stepped into an actual studio for the first time.
Really?
Yeah, a recording studio. A good friend of mine in high school, his brother had this recording studio, and his brother was a rapper, he was a rapper, and I was a singer, so they, you know, they invited me to come sing in the studio. And I felt like, okay, yeah, this is what I want to do.
So what did you sing? Do you remember?
Honestly, I can't remember.
Do you remember the experience?
The experience was like, wow.
Yeah.
Because you hear, or you see these different artists who have, back then they had tapes, mm-hmm. or CDs.
Right.
And it was like, I want my voice to be on one of those.
Mm-hmm.
And finally I had my chance.
Mm-hmm.
I had a chance to where I could pick up a CD and put it in the, you know, and hear me singing, mm-hmm. on the radio. I'm like, wow, this is cool. And so that's how, you know, that's what that experience was for me.
Yeah, but so it gave you an opportunity also to hear yourself. It's not the
yes.
same as when you hear yourself with your ears, as when
no,
you hear
totally
yourself.
No, it's totally different. Yeah, when you hear yourself, when you can play back something that you did, you're able to critique yourself. You're able to find out, you know, find your flaws. You know, what could I have done different?
So did you hear things that
oh,
you
yeah.
would have done
all
different?
All the time.
Really?
All the time.
Still?
Yes. Still to this date. If I play back something that, you know, I've sang, I could find something wrong with it. I don't care how good people may think it is, I can always find something wrong with
oh,
it,
dear.
Which I appreciate, simply being because I feel like if you ever reach the point where you can't learn anymore is when you fail.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I'm always critiquing, always trying to work better to better myself. One of my sincere prayers is that I never get to the point where I feel like I've made it. I never want to reach that point.
Yeah.
Because, like I say, when you reach the point where you think you've made it is when you actually fail.
It's over.
It's
right.
Over. It's
yeah, right. That's right. Okay, so now, how are your family feeling about this? I mean, do they know how committed you are to this?
Oh, yeah. So committed.
Then, when you were a teenager, did they know?
Yes. So committed that I can't remember what age I was, but it was one particular time, and I was singing in the church, And one of my uncles was there. Actually, I think both of them there. One is actually a singer as well. And this particular time, not that I thought I was the best, but I thought I gave my all. I thought I did my best. And so we get home, and my uncle says, "You sounded like crap."
Ooh.
Right, that's the response. I always get that response. But it was the best...
wake-up call.
...that I could ever get in my life.
Yeah.
People say, "Oh, was he that..." You know, he actually, you know, cursed, but he's like, "Was he actually that mean?" No, he wasn't that mean. It was just that he wanted to see more.
Yeah, yeah. So you believed him.
That is, whenever, you know, people ask me, you know, who are my idols when it, you know, in the industry, my uncle is. It's not, you know, not, don't get me wrong, I do admire, you know, the Marvin Gaye's, the Jamie Foxx, the Tyrese, the Tank, you know, those singers and all, but I really look up to my uncle.
Because?
Because of his drive, you know, his inspiration. Like, I know he was inspired to be, you know, a singer, recording artist, and for whatever reason it didn't work for him. And instead of him being selfish.
Or bitter.
Or bitter about it, he said, "Okay, it didn't work for me, but let me help push my nephew."
Wow.
And not in a way where he... not in a way where he praised me or worshipped me, but he was the one in my corner that would, you know, be honest with me and tell me when I sounded horrible, mm-hmm. or when I did bad, or when I could have done something different.
Well, and was he equally willing to tell you when you did good?
Yes. Oh, yeah. He would tell me if I did good. Mm-hmm. It may not have been, "Oh, you did great." It, you know, could have been, "It was okay."
Okay, right.
You know, but,
he wants you to get a swelled head.
To this day, I appreciate it.
Yeah.
And that's where I get the "when you make it is when you fail."
Yeah.
Because it kept that learning spirit in me. It kept that always wanting to do better.
Well, it kept you from arrogance.
Oh.
Which I imagine would have been very easy because it came so easily to you and people responded so quickly to you. So I think it would have been easy for you to think, "Oh, this isn't hard. I can do this. I got it, right?
You're right, because now when people tell me that, you know, they feel like I did an awesome job or they thought I did a great job, in the back of my head, I'll say thank you, you know, because it's polite. And I really do, you know, respect their decision. But in the back of my head, I say, they're lying to me.
Ooh.
But, and they may not be lying.
No, probably they're not.
I genuinely believe that they've been 100% honest. But for me to have that, you know, although, because that's how it happened. The people in church were telling me, "Oh, you did so great, you did so good." And I get home, my uncle says, "You sound like shit."
Right.
And so that's what I keep in the back of my head.
Okay, so are you ever really satisfied? Do you ever really say, "I nailed that"?
I can't. I can't say that I am.
Oh, my dear.
I can't say that I am.
Well,
I would, the closest I would come would be, "I gave my all."
Yes, I did my best.
I did my best. That's the closest I would ever come to, "I nailed it." The closest I would come with, "I gave my all, I did my best."
Wow.
However it happened, I did my best.
Right.
And as long as I feel like I did my best,
then
that's
you're
all
okay.
That matters. I'm okay with that.
Yeah, I got it.
Yeah.
It's funny because I understand that and I admire it. At the same time, I can't help wanting you to get off on it. You know, to enjoy it as much as everybody else does, you know, you're bringing so much pleasure.
But that's my enjoyment.
Yeah, okay, good.
My enjoyment is, one, knowing that I'm giving my best,
mm-hmm.
and two, to see a smile.
Mm-hmm.
As long, you know, if I see a smile and I know that I made someone happy, I've done, you know, that's my enjoyment in it all.
Well, I really enjoyed dancing with you. I'll tell you that.
And I'm not the dancer either.
No, you were great. You were great. That was not.
I like to say I have two left feet.
No.
Yes, definitely.
God, you are so hard on yourself.
Oh, definitely. I'm not a dancer.
No. Okay, all right. So, have you studied at all? Have you studied voice or dance or acting or any of that?
When you say study.
I mean, have taken classes in it?
No.
No.
No. All of my... what I would consider studying or classes would be stuff that I've done on my own or people, you know, I've worked with on a personal level. But
what do you mean?
Like working with Nate Jacob.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
right.
You know, him being the vocalist that he is, you know, and a friend helping me and giving me different vocal techniques or vocal tips, that type of thing. But never.
And acting?
No, not
even from Nate.
From Nate a little bit.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say to the extent that I would like to, because I've actually taken a liking to acting.
Mm-hmm.
But very little. Very little.
Well, there are. It's not too late.
No, it's never too late.
No, it's not too late. And given your, I don't know what to call it, your need really to keep growing,
mm-hmm.
maybe that's the next thing for you.
It is, definitely. You know, right? That is actually the next step for my career.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, you see a lot of artists and singers that cross over, they do movies.
Right.
I'm not sure if they take any acting classes or not. I mean, they do it well.
Mm-hmm. So,
but that is actually the next step in my career. Is actually trying to, I don't want to say perfect.
No, yeah, enhance your skills.
Enhance my acting skills.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay,
so did Nate direct you in this?
Marvin Gaye? Yes, Nate is the director.
Okay. All right, so it's an interesting dichotomy. On the one hand, this shyness, which I completely believe in, you know, I mean, I can see it in you. And on the other hand, this pleasure at doing this thing, which you do, which is the opposite of shy. I mean, you can't be shy on that stage. You can't, you know, I mean, you can't give your all to that, you know, and be shy at the same time. So, so when you said, before, you said several times, so when I get on stage, I shake it off. Do you know how you do that? I mean, is it magic?
I don't.
No, it's magic. Right? It just happens.
Pretty much.
Right. You don't go there and do some kind of technique.
No. No. It's funny because people often tell me that when they see me on stage, they can tell that I'm in a different element.
Mm-hmm.
Because outside of the stage, they know who I am.
Right.
And so when they see me perform, they say, it's not you. And I truly believe it's not me.
Yeah, who is that guy up there on the stage?
Well, it's spiritual.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely spiritual.
So you feel like it's coming through you?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's coming down and out.
Down and out.
Yes, I like to say I'm just a vessel that God is using to make his people happy.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so this play, let's talk a little bit about this play.
Okay.
Is it very different from The Man and His Music? Or
there are some revisions.
Mm-hmm.
There are some things that changed. I think, me personally, I think it's stronger.
Mm-hmm.
Musically, I think there's a few differences in it.
Are you doing different songs or are you doing different arrangements?
Different arrangements.
Mm-hmm.
Different arrangements.
Right.
Yeah.
And who did that? Was it Jay, the musical director? Or?
No, that was Nate, the director, actually.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Because when we finished the first Marvin Gaye, which, although we knew was very new, it was a baby, and we knew that it wasn't fully developed, after that show, Nate, you know, went into a workshop and he kind of went to doing some rewrites and seeing how he could make it better and enhancing it. And so those were some of the changes that he made, which is why I feel like it's going to be a little stronger than the first one. I think it, reading the script and going through rehearsals now, it's a little bit more emotional.
Is it?
Yeah.
Well, that's an interesting thing in relationship to your shyness. How is it for you to play emotion on stage?
Easy.
I see.
And the reason I say it's easy is because behind this hard shell of mine, I am very God-fearing and heart-led. So, you know, I have a love for people. I have a passion for people. And in my life, or should I say, what I feel God uses me for is to make his people happy. And that is actually what I enjoy in life.
Mm-hmm.
If I can see a smile on your face, or I know that genuinely I did something to change your world in from something small to something big, I've made my accomplishment.
You want to tell me what makes you think you have a hard shell?
there's a saying that you You have to be hard on the outside, but soft on the inside.
I'm sorry, but you don't seem to be hard anywhere here. you're just a big softie.
It's funny because some people like to say that I'm cold-hearted.
Really?
Yeah, I've gotten
that. Are those people who know you?
No. I won't say that. They genuinely know.
No.
Anybody that knows me, that genuinely and really knows me, knows that I love people.
Yeah.
I feel like it's easy, you know, but that's why I said I have a hard shell is because I've been told that, you know, I don't care, I have a cold heart. And
this must be a woman who wanted you.
Could be.
Who you didn't want, because I don't see it, you know.
It could be.
But what I find myself thinking is, your family is very supportive, no?
Yes.
Or they, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So you grew up feeling, I'm making this up, so correct me if I'm wrong, but you grew up feeling cared about, appreciated, valued, no?
Yes, definitely. I always had family support,
mm-hmm.
family love. What I did not have, or should I say what I was very afraid of, was because my grandmother was my pastor or my minister, I always felt like I would be in the restraints of the church.
Ah, yes.
And
everybody's looking at the grandson of the pastor.
Right.
You need to be especially good and whatever, right?
Right, exactly. I can't do any wrong.
Right, right.
You know, that sort of thing. So, and especially in my teenage years when I wanted to do other things,
mm-hmm.
I was also afraid because it's like, you know, my grandmother's the pastor. What is people going to say? What are people going to think? And so, you know, that time was very, very hard for me.
I'll bet it was. But what's so interesting about you, it seems to me, is that you didn't seem, well, again, correct me, mm-hmm. did you rebel?
A little bit.
A little on the side, right?
The reason I say I rebel, not because I was disrespectful of that sort to my grandmother, but I knew how she felt.
Right.
I knew that because of her upbringing, she wasn't very fond of what we consider secular or R&B music. It just wasn't her. She was a pastor, and so she felt like she had to, you know, be an example, set an example. So I did rebel because I did it anyway.
But you rebelled with the music.
With the music.
I mean, you didn't, you know, rob cars or get drunk or make somebody pregnant or something. You did it with the music,
I rebelled
right?
with the music.
Yeah.
And funny, because she was the first person that I thought would put me down.
Yes.
Because of, you know, who she was and her stature. And actually, she was the first person to support me.
Yeah.
She told me that, you know, we all have different callings in life. Her calling for that sake was to be the pastor of a small church, you know, in Sarasota. My calling could be that I'm supposed to touch the world in many different ways. And she would always say that God uses people in many different ways and in many different venues. And so now, because she actually came to Marvin Gaye's show.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was kind of hard. You know, mm-hmm. my grandmother's sitting there and I'm singing like, let's get it on, et cetera.
Right, right.
But she was, I appreciate her because she was able to look beyond the music. She knew that it wasn't the music that I was, you know, it wasn't about
the lyric.
No, it wasn't the lyric.
Right.
It was what I was doing to touch somebody.
Right.
You know, and if it caused God to have me to sing a sexual healing or let's get it on to establish a relationship so that when that person really gets to know who I am, and then I can start ministering to them that way. So, you know, I hold on to that now.
Yeah, what the point I was trying to make, which you are making for me, is how important, life-changing it is to have the people who raise you, who matter to you.
That's all that matters.
That's all that matters.
That's all that matters.
And it makes it possible for you to be as free as you are on stage.
Yes, it makes it so much easier.
That's right. It's safe.
Mm-hmm.
It's safe.
Mm-hmm. Which is different with Marvin because Marvin, he had the support from his mom and his siblings, but the one person he wanted support from, which was his dad, he didn't get it.
Mm.
And so it made life very hard for him. So every day, Marvin worked to please his dad.
Aye.
which in my instance is a little different. You know, I have the support of my family, so every day I work to please God.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how can, you know, what can I do to please Him? And so that's what makes what I do so much easier. Now, I won't say it wasn't, it was an easy road getting here.
Well, talk to me about that.
Because I did get, you know, scorned and, you know, talked about because of what I was doing.
By whom?
The Christian community. Yeah. Which I always feel like there's always some good in the bad, mm-hmm. Which actually really made my relationship with God stronger. The Christians felt like, because I was born and raised in the church, and I am, you know, what you would consider a worship leader, they felt like I couldn't do that, mm-hmm. or shouldn't be doing that,
yeah.
in singing what they consider secular music. And so, with going through that, it made me dig deeper into finding out the purpose that God had for my life. It made me dig deeper into what His Word really said. You know, there's a story in the Bible where it talks about Him becoming as an addict, or going out and reaching to those, let's say, drug addicts or alcoholics, because they're not going to come to the church because, you know, they feel like I'm not worthy, I'm not good enough.
Right.
Not knowing that, you know, the church is, mm-hmm. it's a hospital for the sick and, you know, the ones that really need it. It's not a club for the saints. And so I live by that.
Yeah.
I live by that. You know, it's not the people in the church that I am trying to reach, because if you're in a church, that means you know, you know, you I can't save you.
No.
I'm not a savior. Jesus is the savior. My job is to simply introduce you.
Yes, to get people in the door.
My job is to simply introduce you to the person that can save you. And that's through my testimony. That's through my life experiences that I've been through. And so when you look at me and you say, wow, Sheldon went through that and he made it through.
Yeah, I really want to highlight this, the ability that some people have, that you have, to recognize who they really are and honor that in the face of obstacle.
Yeah.
You know, not everybody can do that. What are you thinking?
It was hard.
I'll bet it was.
It was, because I can't say it happened overnight. Because I made some decisions based upon what people thought about me. You know,
yeah, you tried different routes.
Right. Because, you know, I'm very loyal, you know, to people I consider friends. So I valued opinions, I valued thoughts. And so I would make decisions based on that. And it wasn't until recently, actually, maybe a year or two ago, that I've actually come into who I really am,
yeah.
and my purpose. And able to honor that.
Okay, so how did you wind up in WBTT?
It was Nate. Nate actually had heard me sing at a good friend of mine's funeral. We were like 21, 22. She died of breast cancer.
Mm.
She had three kids.
God.
We were very close in school. And so here I am singing at this funeral. And all Nate can see is, wow. He has a lot of potential.
Mm-hmm.
And so Nate came to me. I was working at Verizon at the time. He would come to my job and, you know, say, hey, I have this theater company. Would you be interested? And I blew him off for like a year.
Wow.
And finally, after, you know, talking to my mom, because he actually ran into my mom. And he was like, yeah, you know, I've been trying to get your son, and I don't think he's interested. And she said, let me talk to him. And so she did. She sat me down. She talked to me. She said, you know, you never know what doors God is trying to open up.
He keeps banging on you.
Yeah,
you don't
want
to let, you don't want
to
see it.
Or who He's trying to use,
mm-hmm.
to live.
Or how He's trying to use
you. Or how He's trying to use
right.
me, exactly. And so that's what made me, you know.
So you said, oh, all right, I'll give it a shot.
Well, actually, it didn't come that easy. Because Nate had made up in his mind that he wasn't going to ask me anymore. And in one particular rehearsal, Nate needed another guy. And so Nate, he told the cast member, he's like, you know, there was this one guy that I had considered, but I'm not going to call him. I've asked him, you know, numerous times. And so one of the cast members, Niecy, who played Tammy Terrell,
mm-hmm.
She says, "Who, Nate?" And Nate says, "Oh, this, you know, this gentleman, he's from Sarasota." And she was like, "Who, Sheldon?" He was like, "Yeah." And so Niecy convinced Nate.
Wow.
She said, "Nate,
try one more.
Try one more time. Give him one more." So that night, he called me in the middle of rehearsal, and I came down to the rehearsal space, and I've been there ever since.
Wow. Yeah, and you were clearly meant to be in this,
yeah, I've been there ever since. So.
Right. So after Marvin, do you have plans? Do you know, or are you just one day at a time?
Just one day at a time right now. I have some things in place, but which I carefully speak of because, you know, it isn't in stone. There are some things lined up which, you know, once it's actually in stone on paper, then we can move forward.
Okay.
But after Marvin, I do plan on, I'll be working on some original music.
That you're writing or that someone else?
No, that I'll be writing.
Really?
Be going into the studio. Yeah, I think it's time.
Are you writing music and lyrics?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
Do you play an instrument?
No.
So you just sing it?
Just sing it.
So then you got to get somebody to write it down for you.
Oh, you mean the musically?
Yeah.
Yeah,
right.
Musically, yes. I've had to get someone to, you know, play it for me.
Right. So you've written some songs?
Mm-hmm. Actually, one original song I had in my showcase.
You'll give me the CD.
I'll give you the CD.
Yay,
so
all right, good.
It'll be, I think it should be the first song on the CD.
Okay, all right. Are there any songs in the showcase from Marvin?
Yes.
Oh, good, then I can use them too.
Yes.
Yeah. All right, okay, so the last question I ask is, you know, having given your life, and really, if you imagine that this started at 6 years old, you know, you have really given a life to the pursuit of bringing music to other people, you know, using your God-given talent, right? Is there anything you would say about what that's like?
And it's funny because the journey isn't over.
No kidding.
But from where I've come, whether it be singing, acting, drawing, or even you being, you know, an interviewer, whatever you have a passion or love to do, do it. And do it with an open heart. It'll make the road much easier.
That's a great place to stop. Thank you very much, Sheldon.
Thank you.
Whatever you have a love or a passion to do, do it, and do it with an open heart. It will make the road much easier. That is, of course, what The Lynn Show is all about discovering who you really are, what it is that really captures you, engages you, compels
you.
And doing it with your open heart, your whole self. Not everybody has a path that is unobstructed. Certainly, Sheldon did not have an unobstructed path. Having discovered his passion, his love at six, that didn't mean that it was simply open to him. As you heard, he ran into some significant obstacles. But he was very fortunate. He had some real support and encouragement and love from those people who matter most. Not everybody has that. So many of us are discouraged, and not because the people who matter are mean or cruel or unloving. Sometimes they just don't understand. Much in the way that some of Sheldon's congregation didn't understand. So when people don't understand, they can obstruct. So the question that The Lynn Show is always asking is there something that you fell in love with, were drawn to, found exciting and irresistible, and yet were unable to follow for one reason or another? Do you know what it was? Can you remember it? when I ask this question, does it pop into your mind? Is there a flash? Oh, yes. I used to draw when I was a kid, and I could spend hours at it, you know? I could just get lost in it. And I don't know what happened to that. I don't know why I stopped doing that. Or maybe you even remember somebody said, you know, drawing was a sissy thing and you shouldn't do it, or you weren't any good at it. Maybe somebody told you that. Or maybe it's not, as Sheldon also says, not an art, but something that you felt strongly about, some way of being, some quality which you had to surrender, to deny, to hide. And if that's so, are you considering the possibility that you could get it back? Of course, as a psychotherapist, I know the value of psychotherapy as a road back to those things which we had to surrender. But you listen to Sheldon, and you can hear that there are other roads back. And I certainly am open to the possibility of you finding any road back that you can, as long as you continue to search for your very own self. Because as Sheldon says, it makes the road so much easier. If you want to talk to me about this, you know you can find me at my website, thelynnshow.com. Don't leave the E out of Lynn. We're going to go out on another Marvin Gaye song, giving you another opportunity to see what you are going to experience when you come to see Sheldon playing Marvin Gaye in Marvin Gaye, the Prince of Soul. As always, I hope that you got something you can use from this show, something that interested you, something that you didn't know, something that you knew that you'd forgotten. Or maybe it's just that you're enjoying, as I am, listening to the original Marvin Gaye and anticipating Sheldon Rodin's performance. In any case, something that will bring you back, because as always, I will be back next week, same time, same station. And as always, I sure hope you will be too.
Whoa, oh, mercy, mercy me. Oh, things ain't what they used to be now. Where did all the blue skies go? Poison is the wind that blows from the north and south and east. Whoa, mercy, mercy me. All things and what they used to be lost. Oil wasted on the oceans and upon our seas. Fish full of mercury. Oh, oh, mercy, mercy me. All things and what they used to be lost now. Radiation underground and in the sky. Animals and birds who live nearby are lies. Mercy, mercy me. All things and what they used to be. What about this overcrowded land? How much more we use from man? Can't you stand?
see I'm getting older. My hair is turning gray. Oh, you say my face and figure have both seen better days. Well, I won't be retiring. I won't slip out of sight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I just keep returning like some goddamn boomerang. No, I won't. My shot, my time has come and gone. Oh, won't I please get off the stage, let someone else get on. Well, I won't be relegated or leave without a fight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a bell I keep on ringing, not a chime that I once rang. You may think it's unseemly. Well, I don't give a dang. No, I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Rising from the ashes, I may be running out of time, but it ain't over yet. 'Cause me and Sister Phoenix, we won't give up the flight. No, no, we will not go gentle into that good night. And I won't go with a whimper. I'm going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I may not be as juicy, hell, but I still got some tang. So you won't hear me simper. I may have gotten limper, but I won't go with a whimper.
Thinks we're all the mother. Who are they to judge us?
Mother, mother,
simply call us we wear our hair long.
Mother, mother,
ooh.